Michael, this is Cameron Crowe calling. Amazingly, I'm on time. I seem to have missed you, so why don't you give me a call back? I'm at 481-7375, and let me know when it would be a good time to talk. Bye-bye.
I started thinking,
what is happening here? What is it? Then what is it? Is this like a tangential sampler that has something to do with the movie? Because it's not a soundtrack.
Yeah.
I mean, not even Colonel Parker did that with an Elvis album. You know, all those songs were in Elvis movies. So it's weird. It's turned into a really crass marketing tool. And what happened was we got a little money, not a lot, but a little money, which was applied to the budget. And they said you can get an extra few scenes, you know, and we can get some money from Epic, who will give you total creative control. You can do whatever you want, and you get your extra scenes filming the movie. And I said, great.
Okay.
The irony is that all this stuff, which is the music that I was listening to or the music we loved, has become very commercial. And so it was a good investment for Epic. But, yeah, nobody's getting rich on this.
Right. So, also on the single...
But neither of us have participation in the music, just so it's just... for you to know.
Well, is all the songs on the soundtrack found in the movie?
Every one of them, and they're used prominently, which is why those songs are on the album.
Okay.
And there's a ton of other music that's used prominently, like John Coltrane, everything from John Coltrane to Tad to R.E.M. to Meat Beat Manifesto, I think.
Wow.
There's all kinds of stuff in there.
So it's really a very musical sounding picture.
It is. The whole thing is kind of structured to be like an album. That was the original idea, you know, to have like 8 or 9 or 10 tracks that kind of play together as a whole. The tracks being segments, you know.
Okay.
That's how the movie's structured.
Okay. And
which is a bitch to edit, but happy to be sitting here now telling you that's the structure of the movie.
Yeah, I bet you're happy with a little vacation time on your hands. Or something like that.
Something like that.
Okay, but the movie itself is not about the Seattle scene, is it?
It is not. And it never was. What I've said really is that you can compare it to Manhattan or a movie like that that's kind of a movie about relationships with a great rich backdrop, you know, so I was lucky to have Seattle as a backdrop, and Matt Dillon does play a musician, so we're able to kind of get the whole Seattle guy's mentality in there. The funny thing is, we filmed this movie a year and a half ago, you know, so all these, Matt Dillon has these raps in the movie about, you know, he's taking out the garbage and stuff, and he's saying, hey, you know, they say, how's your band doing, and he says, well, you know, we're huge in Belgium and Italy. And so the funny thing is, these were kind of like ironic jokes that I put in there. But now you read all these raps in interviews. So now it's like, plays almost like a documentary.
No kidding.
It's funny. But Matt did a great job. And Pearl Jam plays band in the movie. So that's kind of how the rumor got started, that it was a movie about the Seattle scene.
Right. But it's mainly a love story between Matt and I can't remember her name.
Bridget Fonda. It's like actually six main characters, and they're like two of the main characters.
Okay.
And so they all live around an apartment house, and it's kind of how their lives intersect. It's that kind of movie.
Okay. I just got done reading the screenplay for... Well, actually, we'll get back to that. Who wrote this screenplay?
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay. And what other screenplays have you written that have been made into movies?
Fast Times at Ridgemont High, a movie called The Wildlife, Say Anything, and this one.
Okay. And how, did you direct all those?
No, I just directed Say Anything and this one.
Okay. So those are your only two directorial?
Yeah.
Okay. So you haven't...
Seattle Music, Say Anything came out in 89. We had Seattle Music in that movie. We had, like, the first time Soundgarden or Mother Love Bone was ever in a movie. Yeah, so it's like, I've kind of been on this track for a while.
Okay. And that all stems from, what, your relationship with Nancy? Or have you lived here before you got together with Nancy?
No, Nancy gave me someone to visit up here, but I always loved the area. First came here in 1974, writing a story on Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and so I really loved it. And I was like 17 at the time.
Wow.
But the thing is, I really loved it up here, and I just loved music, you know, so it was kind of a natural thing to get hooked into some of these bands. I love guitar. I love hard rock, and I love guitar-oriented rock, and in the middle of the 80s, there was the synth pop garbage everywhere, and I just, like, found that guitar was still alive in the Northwest.
Right on.
So that kind of fueled my love.
Who are you writing a Crosby, Stills, and Nash article for, or who writing a story for?
Crawdaddy Magazine.
Okay, so you started out as a rock journalist?
I did.
Wow, okay.
I used to be an editor of Rolling Stone, too.
You did?
Yeah.
Wow. And how old are you?
34.
Oh, you stud. I can't believe you're...
No, you're the stud.
No.
You.
I'm idolizing you now. I didn't realize how...
No, don't
just,
do that.
I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Not quite idolizing, but I am admiring your body of work because that is definitely something that I'm moving towards out of rock journalism, so...
Good. How old are you?
25.
Nice.
So I've got a late start, it sounds like.
Oh, no way.
Let's see. Those are all the movies you've made, and you've never directed somebody else's screenplay. Would you do that?
Sure, if the right one came along. I would have directed Little Man Tate, you know. I really loved that script. But
did that come across your plate as an option?
I'm boring you now. No one ever offered it to me. But I just, you know, I like to write. I write all the time, and you know, I'm doing a story for Rolling Stone on the making of the movie right now. So that's pretty much journalism, the most fun that I have, you know.
It's the most fun?
Yeah. I did liner notes for the Led Zeppelin box set and for the Dylan album Biograph, and it was
wow.
The most fun I ever had.
So you enjoy that more than screenplay writing?
Yeah, I do.
Wild. Okay. Why not Temple of the Dog on this album? Or in the picture? Or
good question. I love Temple of the Dog, and Hunger Strike was in the movie for a long time, and we cut the sequence that Hunger Strike appeared in. A&M, you know, which has Soundgarden and Temple of the Dog.
Right.
A&M has not been... A&M has fought putting music and stuff that I've written for years, and I don't know why. They had the Soundgarden music from Louder Than Love pulled out of Say Anything.
Wow.
Yeah, so we went and used stuff from Ultra Mega OK. They've had a nasty attitude towards us whenever we wanted to use some of their music, and the truth is only with great jockeying from Susan Silver and Chris Cornell were we able to get a new Soundgarden song and Chris solo in this movie, and I think we felt like Temple of the Dog they would never let us have. I don't want to start a thing with A&M, but that's the answer to your question.
Right, okay.
Why should they really, in a way? I think they felt they had a big investment in Soundgarden, and, you know, our label was CBS, and that's like giving, you know, one of your best players to another team. Temple of the Dog was in Wayne's World, so.
And who did Wayne's World come out on?
Warner Brothers.
Okay.
But I just want to say I love Temple of the Dog, and certainly, you know, I love Cornell, who scored part of the movie. He does incidental guitar work throughout the movie, not just those songs.
Right. Now, who did he score that with? Or he kind
of
did
part of it, and Paul Westerberg did a slightly larger part of it.
Okay. And how is it that Westerberg and Smashing Pumpkins wound up on this with Seattle as a backdrop, kind of it's a cohesive kind of thing, and then there's these slight incongruities.
Well, the incongruities kind of serve to show that we're not in the business of selling Seattle music. I mean, that Bruce and Jonathan have really done an amazing job with their samplers, and the truth is, this is just the music that I loved and that worked in the movie. And so a lion's share of it became Seattle rock, but the truth is, you know,
it's just music.
Kyle Westerberg really is the spirit of the movie, and Smashing Pumpkins, while it has kind of a Seattle sound, really fit well. And, you know, you are limited in a way because it's set in the Northwest. That certain types of music really work and certain types don't. Like Pat DiNizio from the Smithereens has a little part in the movie. And he wanted to do some music, but every time we tried to put Smithereens in, it didn't quite work. It was an odd thing, you know.
Right.
Westerberg comes in and starts doing music, and it works. And there is kind of a soul connection, I think, between Westerberg and you know, replacement stuff and some of the bands up here, particularly Nirvana, you know, or like some of the stuff that tends to go more pop hard rock. I mean, Westerberg is one of the first guys to have like pretty melodies built into hard thrashing rock.
Right.
And so
punk attitude,
exactly. And so that stuff kind of worked.
How was it like working with Paul, or did you get to do much of it?
I'm a big fan, you know. I was there.
He's great.
And I had to like stop myself from constantly asking fan type questions, you know. But I love Westerberg, and he's a real hard worker, you know, you read all this stuff about reckless replacements behavior and everything. He was just a hard-working guy that wanted to be known as someone that could score a movie, and he really pulled it off.
How do you feel about the timing of the whole deal? I mean, the fact that when you were doing it, it kind of ballooned into a scene thing, or at least rumored to be, and then the whole Seattle thing exploded internationally.
Yeah.
As far as music,
good question. Well, I thought it would be a slower build, actually. And, you know, the most you can hope for your favorite musicians and bands, they have a good, long, slow-building career.
Like Soundgarden.
And so, you know, you're simultaneously really happy for these guys that work their asses off, and also you just want to... You hope that they're always able to stay underdogs in some way, because that's one of the great things about music around Northwest. These guys don't have, like, you know, pretentious LA attitudes or anything like that. You know, it's really about the music and the privilege of playing the music. So you almost don't want to see these guys showered with too much money and adulation. But the truth is that they're so talented, you know, they can handle it. Like Pearl Jam, for example, still is kind of an underdog band, even though they're huge now. Just because, you know, you don't see Eddie, Jeff, and Stone out there, you know, playing arenas, blah, blah, blah. You know, they'll stay like three acts down on a Lollapalooza show and stuff
right.
like that. And so... I'm giving you too long of an answer, but the truth is the success came more quickly and more hugely than we ever thought, and I'm really happy for these guys. I also want to make sure that everybody knows that we did this movie a year and a half ago, and it's a labor of love, because a lot of the people are actually actors in the movie and read the script from the very beginning, and you know, you know, I was really happy to make a movie where Bridget Fonda shares a scene with Pat, you know? if it bombs, I will have been happy just on that level. You know?
That's great. Okay, let's see. Is there any way I could get a copy of the screenplay?
Yeah, why don't you call... well, actually, I'd rather you see the movie, because the movie is a little different than the screenplay.
Right.
And
that's due August 28th or something?
Yeah.
Okay, and that'll open here as well as other places on August 28th?
Yeah.
Where's the initial showing for? Is there somebody I know who acted in it was wondering when there was going to be like a Seattle showing for cast and crew.
Well, we're going to have something probably in about 3 weeks or so.
Okay. Okay.
So that'll be good. And I'll certainly make sure you're called for that.
That'd be great. Yeah, great. What do you think? Okay, just because I just finished Soderbergh's book on the making and writing of Sex Lies.
Uh-huh.
Are you? I don't know how to put it. Are you an art director? Are you the type that wants to go to like the American Film Festival or Cannes?
I do. They have never invited me to any of these festivals. One festival in Japan wanted a tape of Say Anything, and they said, you're in our festival. I sent them the tape of the movie, and they called back a month later and said, you're not in our festival. So I don't know. I think, you know, like the bands I love, you know, they...
You're playing the underdog.
They walked the line, you know, of being... wanting to appeal to people and also just being kind of private about wanting to appeal to themselves, you know. And so, like, the stuff that I've written, sometimes it's more successful than other times, you know. And I would love to go to a film festival someday. I don't know how I'm perceived or if I'm even perceived, but, like, I'm a huge fan of Soderbergh's and like, my favorite director, Bill Forsyth, is... you know, a guy that makes these wee little Scottish films.
Yeah.
So I really, you know, have no desire to go cash in on singles and try and make a Bill Murray movie or something, you know,
right.
That they'd even hire me. But some guys look at smaller movies as a stepping stone. And,
define smaller movies.
I don't, you know.
What do you mean by smaller movies? As a step.
Well, let's use Basic Instinct as an example of a big movie.
Right.
You know, I don't really write that kind of stuff, and if I could, I probably would, but I can't. You know, I'm more into like the Woody Allen, Steven Soderbergh.
Okay, so are you talking small budget?
Spike Lee. Yeah, I'm talking about
cast.
Small budget and more humanistic type stories, you know.
Okay.
And by the very their very nature, those movies reach a smaller audience, you know.
Right. Okay.
Most of the world goes to a movie to go on a big e-ticket ride, you know.
Right. E-ticket.
And my dream is to like make small emotional movies an e-ticket ride. It could be a lifelong journey here.
It sounds like you're well on the way.
Well, thank you.
So you're going down to talk to Lon, I guess, this Friday or something on that pirate radio thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope it's as much fun as this.
Do you flatter everybody like this?
No.
Okay. Well, I guess that was the right answer, huh? Actually, Cameron, I would say basically, are you still there? Okay, good. I'd say we're done for